to be honest, I'm more excited about coming back to this episode at the end more than I am about recording the episode. If only everything I say right now would already have been said. Oof, that's like dream within a dream. Podcast within a podcast.
This is an episode I want to listen to. I'm not sure how much I'll have to contribute, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, friends, so we have gathered here today. Well, that sounds a very morbid way to start.
Who died?
Oh, the death of the miniseries. I'm here, and friends are here, to once again discuss The Bear. And this will be spoiler rich. Not as if our good friend Rich Keegan was nickname was Spoiler Rich. It will be rich, full of spoilers. As we talk in this episode, the aim of this episode is for us to now start to take our information that we have stored in the brain and project it into the future and attempt to predict season 3 and all of the potential character arcs that may lead there. And I will highlight, because I have added it in for the reference for people who have listened to all the episodes, that we have matched up our names perfectly this time around. We've got Phil, Lisa, and Chris. No last names, no made-up descriptions of ourselves.
Let's do a summary of where we are. So in the end of season 2, we've just had the opening of the restaurant with a family, friends and family night, right? And at the end of the episode, we have several things. And this is the spoiler-rich thing. So each of our main characters have various things that have just happened. Carmi has a bit of a breakdown and is locked in the freezer and sort of breaks up with his girlfriend through the freezer door and has an argument with Richie through the door after they just had this really miraculous turnaround. Things were going well to start the friends and family night, and then there starts to be some chaos. Carmi gets locked in the freezer door because he did fail to fix the freezer door again. Richie steps up as Expo and kind of knocks it out of the park. Sid jumps in and takes care of things in the kitchen. Tina is stepping up. They had to fire a chef, cook midway through. And so they're all stepping up to fill in these roles. Richie's running Expo and he puts Fac up in the front of the house and he steps in. So all these people, I feel like at the end of the last episode of season 2 are stepping into their purpose and where they could be going in a really meaningful way and kind of showing this great dynamic. But then we see little dominoes falling in each of their lives, where you've got Marcus who receives text that clearly something has happened to his mom. Carmi has imploded in the freezer. He and Richie have this huge throwdown. Sid, she has this really sweet moment with her dad out back, but the stress of it all takes her to the point where she's getting sick. And it's very normal for her in sort of the way she plays it off, but there's this very sweet moment with her dad and sort of recognition that she's got something, he sees that she's made some good choices and that this is a real thing that they should support. So, and then Tina, I don't know if there was anything sort of happening with Tina at the end other than she kind of stepped up and was fitting into her role. So that's kind of where we are at the end of the episode. We've just got this really great opening, but there's a whole bunch of social dynamics that are crumbling around the edges. That's a bit of a summary maybe of where we're ending. So now we're thinking each of these characters, where are they headed, but specifically where are they headed in their leadership and team dynamic that we might see, or where we might hope they go if they were real people and we were working with them as clients.
We encourage you to play along. The aim of this will be that at some point in the future, once the episodes come out, we will be able to watch that season. We'll see how well we've done. We'll offer prizes. There'll be some sort of monetary prizes to each of us. I will give Chris the dollar that I owe him from a mini golf game that we played where I lost. Yeah, then we'll come back and we'll do a review and we'll then start to delve into season 3. But okay, so that's the aim. Let's look at Carmi first of all. He's essentially self-sabotaged, which seems like was somewhat expected. There was almost like this leading in expectation that this couldn't be smooth for him. It was almost like when he started dating Claire, I sort of felt an energy that I hope he doesn't mess this up. And for it to mess up in the way that it did for him felt like, oh, I kind of expected it, but I'm sad about that. What would he need to do? When we see these kind of clashes and divisions between people, like the way that he really is clashed with Richie there at the end, what would our guidance be if we came into a place where they said, look, we've just had this blow up between staff. This is a thing that's happened. We need some outside support. Maybe that would be the advice I'd give. It can't be done in-house, right? We've talked about team development in-house can be tough. But what might we do to try to rectify that?
Chris, in the episode that came out last week, you made a comment about the fundamental love between Carmi and Richie and how that is something they return to often. And I don't have any reason to anticipate that that will be different going forward. Applied to our work, you know, it's a returning to, why are we doing this? What's the meaning of these relationships? And that's not a new pattern. Again, Chris, you pointed that out last week. That's my first thought.
I want to pull Richie into this thought process because I think because of that family trust, that's the foundation, right? So if this organization that is the beef / the bear is as strong as we think it is with these foundations of that family background and that trust and those things that are there, that they can have tough moments like this, but still have enough of a foundation to work through that. If that's true, that blow up will be indicative maybe of a switching of roles. So at the end of season two, Carmi sends Richie off to find his purpose. In that, as he stages for that other restaurant and learns where he could fit into this organization. And we see him come to fruition in this last episode. I think Richie could potentially do that for Carmi in return. And so using that foundation of that connection that they have, potentially Richie's going to step up and show Carmi why he is so important in the role that he has to play and help him find his purpose in the bear. That's just one thought I had, was that maybe we see sort of a reversal there.
It's actually kind of interesting because in previous episodes, we have talked about like that each person has had to go and find their why. But actually, if I reflect about, we never addressed it, like Carmi didn't do that. So from a leadership perspective, he didn't have the opportunity to do his own development. In fact, in reflection, he's often treated like he's the finished article when it comes to like the restaurant world, that he's the finished article. He's gone through all of the previous stuff and now he's the finished article. But that's not really the lesson we would ever want to suggest to any individual in a team, that you've peaked. Now it's just a requirement of other people to improve around you. Yeah, rely on the team more. And say, like, well, I need help and I need support. And maybe that will be relinquishing control that he maybe has and being able to say, like, what do I need? And it might be in different ways. It might be mental health related, but it might also be purpose seeking, where he does some professional development that brings him the why again. Because you also mentioned in a previous episode that he suggests that it's not fun. He's not the process. I think he's completely forgot the why. And maybe this new season will actually focus on everyone else being good and being comfortable and finally figured out their why, and the whole team collectively coming together to help Carmi find his.
There's a tug of war in the late season two between Claire, Sid, and Carmi. Almost a love triangle of sorts, but it's a platonic love triangle of sorts there, where there's a relationship between Sid and Carmi that's not being respected. Because Claire has entered the situation, and they resolve that. But I think Sid resolves that in such a way that she understands that Carmi needs more than just the restaurant to be healthy and sound. But Carmi misinterprets that as saying, like, I can't have an outside relationship because I have to focus on just the restaurant. And I've let Sid and all these other people down by letting Claire distract me. And so there might even be help there if I were working with these people with their professional relationships here, saying, Sid, you need to also be coaching, you're coaching up to Carmi to say it's okay for you to be in this other relationship and to step away. I've got it. I can control this. I can be the executive chef of the bear and let you, Carmi, be the founder slash, you know, whatever that is, giving him permission to not have to put everything on his back, including the personal relationships, saying like, no, it's okay if you have a girlfriend and another person in your life. It's something that I've been talking a lot. I feel like this has come up a lot in my life recently, just with people that I've worked with or even myself. When you have a healthy personal relationship, how much that reflects back on your work. And if you're struggling in one place, how they cross impact. We always talk about how, you know, there's always this balance. Work-life balance was a big buzz phrase for a while. And I don't know that that's true. They're inseparable, I think is a reality. It's because we are humans and we carry all of our social stuff with us. Whether we're at home, we're carrying those social relationships from work. And when we're at work, we're carrying those social relationships from home. You can't fully separate that in a human brain. That's the whole, it's a whole nother show called Severance that we could jump into. So I have a really great, healthy, personal relationship with my fiance and our kids and all this. And that reflects in my healthy work atmosphere. And I think that's sort of where I hope Carmi gets to with some coaching from Sid and Richie, maybe even Tina. I don't know. Like you said, maybe he needs to hear it from everybody.
You know, I think that what I'm about to say could apply to all the characters, perhaps except Sid. And it makes me think about this concept, Chris, that we've been talking about internally at High Five called the life cycle of a nonprofit organization. Now, of course, the Bear is not a nonprofit, it's a restaurant, but the cycle begins with, you know, startup, grow, and then at the top of the wave is sustain. And then from sustain, you can either renew or you can decline and dissolve. And I think that the restaurant is at its peak, potentially, at the end of the last episode in season two. But what does the renewal look like? How do they keep at the peak? And at the foundation, I see an unresolved grief for Mikey. And maybe it's just the way that I saw the show, but yes, there was grief throughout, but I think that there isn't a collective acknowledgement of Mikey's place in all of their lives. And to me, that's like, it creates a tension. Sort of like, what would Mikey think of the bear? It's so different from the beef. And what is the role of his passing in the future? And is that something, we've all worked with organizations that sort of have things that are unresolved. You can feel it the moment you start working with the group. And what do you do? Maybe that's a stretch to apply it to our work. But I wonder what you think about that concept of them not addressing that collectively.
Yes. And I'm going to put a prediction out there for future season three.
Phil, you got to do a prediction sound effect.
Sugar has her baby and names it Mikey. That's just a throw to that celebration point, because I do think that you're right, there's a lack of celebration or mourning of Mikey. They kind of just put their heads down and go. And there's moments of that, but there hasn't been a collective thought around that. And sort of that, it's like a celebration. Yeah, the episode, I think, intentionally cut short so we would all be waiting with bated breath on what's coming in season three. But yeah, I think they need that.
I think another potential piece to talk about is Tina being asked by Sid to take on this role. We talked about this and how happy Tina was. And I hope that the three of us have been in places in our careers where we've been acknowledged for our skills and therefore been given a responsibility or a promotion. And then what follows from that is my question for you both. Like, what happens when you're Is it imposter syndrome? Do you thrive? Do you worry about how you're seen? Sort of, yeah, that's my question.
Well, something that I do think of that relates to some of the work that we've done in the past as well that is tied with this. I wonder if the bear, what we'll experience is maybe when we do come back, in fact, there we have jumped some time distance. And maybe the baby will have already been born and the bear will have been open for a period of time. Like we'll have skipped to the point where the bear has had success and the group now has to deal with success. And what happens when the overwhelming notion of success becomes a part of what they've done? Like I think of how we've worked in the past with hockey teams. I think of the Bruins as an example. The year we worked with them, they won the Stanley Cup. The next year, there was a big discussion around like, what do you do now? How actually the hardest place to be is the previous champion because everyone's got a target on your back, and how that really does affect the team, the dynamic of the team. Can they maintain a level of quality? I think it was Sid at one point was checking out and being aware of all of the restaurants that didn't make it. She'd gone away at one point with success and then went to check in at another point and they'd closed. And there is the ability for success in restaurant business is very low, but they've made it. So how does it feel for that group now that they've made it? And how does that impact them as a group? I think that would make a really interesting story arc. And I think that's where I might see Tina struggle.
There's foreshadowing for that in that Sid and Carmi have a big conversation about what it feels like to have a Michelin star and how Carmi hated it and sort of what that felt like. So there was a little bit of foreshadowing about what that felt like. And I think to your point of the work that we do, I think it is really tricky for an organization to maintain that high level. And what do you have to do? You constantly have to be rethinking sort of yourself and reimagining who you are. You can't just rest on your laurels, so to speak, and just hope that what you did before will work in the past, because that's what happens to blockbusters and places like that. You know, they Kodak, you know, they fail to adapt and adjust. And so as you were even talking about that, Lisa, with the renewing, sort of what is it they're going to be able to do to keep things fresh and renew? And it would be interesting if they did a flash forward, because we sort of are at a peak moment where they seem to have found success, but only in a friends and family. They haven't had customers that were paying yet, you know, and that sort of thing. So it'd be really interesting.
I think sometimes we, like team development, we get this actually a lot from like clients. Like sometimes when we go in to do some team development work, they think that we're brought in because of a failing. Oh, we're in trouble. Like, especially if like we're brought in without the awareness of everyone else, just the supervisor has brought us in. So I'm intrigued by the fact that like, team development actually is really important for those teams that are successful, as well as those teams that are not successful. And I think that renewal piece is an integral part of like performance when it comes to a group and how that team is able to handle that. There's a few characters that I would get concerned about based on like success because of maybe where they're at. Like even a FAC who was just thrown into the front, he really was excited, but like I could say it was overwhelming. Marcus, who was like seeking success with his patisserie stuff. It's just like there's certain characters that this isn't a crack team of A-listers, you know, like it's a ragtag bunch of hardworking individuals, but like how do they work once you get up to those higher levels of the restaurant business? Yeah, it feels like it would be a lot for them.
And I wonder too how much of their dynamic that we've seen so far is based on the assumption of struggle. And if you remove the chronic struggle of trying to open the restaurant and then all of a sudden you have success, what made the team function in a struggle culture isn't going to work in success culture. So like, what does this group look like without chronic, constant challenges, aside from the challenges of, you know, serving dinner every night?
Is their personality defined by their challenge? And so if you remove that challenge, are they able to maintain that characteristic of themselves? It's something that popped up when you were talking a moment ago is for me, I want to look at Richie. And one of the subjects that I talk about a lot in my class when we're defining the elements of being a leader is that there's a big difference between the leader and the manager. And manager is a title. We have people who have power because of their titles, but there's always somebody in an organization who is the leader because of their actions, and not they don't have the title, but they are definitely the leader. And I feel like Richie is that person. We said it early on, he was the leader in a lot of ways in the old methods, in the old kitchen, and he had to be won over to the new systems and those sorts of things. Like, don't mess with the system. And he was very much a leader, and sort of the irony of that is that he didn't have a job in the kitchen. He worked in the front of the house, putting sandwiches out and working the cash register. But he was such a like proponent and obviously influential leader in the organization. Now that he is on board, he sees his purpose. He still doesn't necessarily have a title, you know, within like, not at least within the kitchen format with chefs, sous chefs, and those sorts of things. So to see him continue in that leader by his actions will be interesting to see how that plays out. Because I hope his arc continues on the positive.
I'm also thinking about Carmi and how he is acknowledging his grief and demons through the process of Al-Anon meetings. And that recovery is completely separate from his colleagues, with the exception of his sister. And I am not one to suggest that a leader has to disclose everything about their life to their team. But I wonder how sustainable, again, I don't think I'm repeating the similar theme about grief, but I'm wondering how him being vulnerable and honest and disclosing his feelings in that context, and then really kind of not doing that in the restaurant, but in or expressing himself in a very different way, is that sustainable?
It's the unfortunate part that I think that if I was to look back and think of the listeners to do this task too, of like think of a leader that has had a positive impact in your life in some way, what qualities they may demonstrate. I'm not sure that Carmi would be, if you worked for him, be one of those, because there's a lot of flaws that he has that, you know, impact each individual. There's the definite positivity where it comes to him identifying where people need professional development. But I agree, Lisa. I think his lack of vulnerability to his team is somewhat his undoing, because I think that if they were more aware of some of his vulnerabilities, they wouldn't react in the way they react at that last crucial moment. At times, sometimes your family are the people you don't tell these things to, and friends at work are the ones you confide in more often. Him and Richie, it's a very hard thing for both of those to acknowledge the grief and acknowledge their vulnerabilities because of their possibly upbringing and in the way they are with each other. That I think that the breaking down of those walls, the opportunity for vulnerability from a leadership perspective from him to his team, is that lock that it, once it's unlocked, the team will have a better ability to support each other. And maybe that's why you see Richie able to step in, because he understands it's family, but like, you can't always rely on blood is thicker than water kind of concepts when it comes to, because other people will step away if they keep getting, if you keep being harsh to each other, then guess what? At some point, someone will be, this is no longer worth it for me, and step away. Which brings me to a point, like, do you think that anyone in the current crew, do you think they'll all be there at the end of season three? I mean, like working for the bear, or do you anticipate that anyone is at this point where you could identify that they might be someone who says enough is enough if things do not progress? And I'm gonna start. I think Marcus.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I've been thinking along this arc that all of these people are family and that they don't go anywhere, because they even brought Ibrahim back in and found a place for him. And it's like, you don't, oh, there's a, in the Simon Sinek TED Talk, he talks about a company in which they don't talk about head counts, they talk about heart counts, and you would never think of firing your children or something like that from your family. You don't do that. And so I sort of see that same model here, where this is family. We don't fire family. The only people who get let go in this whole experience are that a hired on person in that last episode. Like, nobody else, even through all of the nonsense and the crazy chaos that happens in season one and two, nobody is let go. People walk away, but they're brought back in. And so I have a hard time. If this was an organization I was cheering for and working with, I would hope that they would think about that from the heart counts, not the head counts, the saying like, we don't fire family. You know, we find a way. And it gets, and this is the thought that I had earlier that I had lost, was it reminds me of strengths-based leadership here, that's something that's happened over the course of season two. Is it's, we talk about them finding their purpose, but I think each one of them has also been given the space to explore a strength that they have. And so finding roles within the organization that allow people to live in their strengths as opposed to fixing things that are wrong with them. So Marcus is a fantastically creative baker. Let's let him not just make rolls. We can source those somewhere else. Let's get him what he needs to excel in pastry chef and then really bring that to the forefront. Tina is a great leader of people. And so giving her the job of the sous, where she is training these new people in the organization, I hope she's excelling, because that's a strength of hers, is leading other people. She's a people person in a lot of ways, more so than a technical chef, although her skills obviously advance. And Sid is a miraculously talented chef, but Expo was not where she was best suited. It's on the creative side of menu creation and inspiring people. Like, that's one area where Carmi has been very successful in this business as a leader, is like one of the things that we used to tell people, surround yourself with people who make you look better, you know? So like, that's what you do is when I run a program, I hire people who make me look better because their work is so elevated and I can lean on their successes and their strengths, and they fill in gaps in what I can't do and what I don't do well. He's done a miraculous job of, he brings in Sid, sees that she has this stuff, lets Marcus flex where he is, gives Richie purpose and what he's good at. He's done it all very quietly, though. Yeah, it is time for, I think, the rest of the group to sort of step up and give Carmi what he needs.
I love that, Chris. And I, in terms of changes, I can't anticipate anybody not being there for the reasons that you said, but also because I just don't want to think about that. But I do think about that there will be new people. I mean, the whole show started with Sid being an outsider, and that's how it's set up. We sort of got to know everybody through Sid as this foil to this existing culture. And I think about my own experience at High Five and other places that I've worked, when the whole team knows each other well, and we've got our, you know, unsaid systems of how we work together. And then somebody new comes in, and all of a sudden you have to speak the unspoken and you sort of explain, oh, why are you doing things this way? I think that will inherently, no matter who it is, be a challenge.
Who do you think this team needs? What would you add to this team? What element, or what's the character that you would bring in to round this team out and bring a dynamic that they need or skill set that they need?
My answer to your question, Chris, is they need to hire Jen Ottinger.
Jen Ottinger is our executive director.
Someone like Jen, who has the ability to decide, can we do this ourselves or do we have to outsource it? That's one thing. Two, keeping something moving along and sort of knowing to assess, are we invested too much in this and so we're not willing to let it go? Like asking those really big, important questions. And then someone who can lead but doesn't have to have grown up in a kitchen. Like, look at The Office. Carmi's office is a complete disaster, and that's not sustainable. And Jen would clean that up in a second and make a system that everybody can understand if they need to.
So maybe the answer to my question is that they already did bring in that person that they needed, and it is Sugar.
I think it is. I don't know what's going to happen with her with a baby, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe Sugar is the Jen Ottinger of the bear.
Awesome, friends, because we've concluded our mini-series, and we've added many hopes and or dreams for the future of this show, all which will be predicted in June, and all will be accurate because of our incredible psychic abilities. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Chris, for all of your wonderful insights. Friends who are listening, reach out, let us know what you thought of these last few episodes. If you want us to do a similar one or similar ones in the future, please let us know. And maybe you have a community questions episode that we could do where you can ask us questions from your perspective as you've watched the show. And we'd be happy to talk about the things that you would like us to talk about. So follow the instructions at the end in the description and you'll find my email there, podcast@highfiveadventure.org. But no one really hears me then and writes it down. So just check out the description. I think that's always the easiest. Thank you, friends. And we'll see you on the next
one. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Vertical Playtime.
And then what about thanks for listening to High Fives Podcast?
Can you do it?
Okay, try.
Thanks for giving us a good podcast, guys.